Good morning, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the Backyard Mission Trip is back later this month. It takes an army of hardworking volunteers to pull it off, but it's a day you won't soon forget. We'll tell you how you can become involved. Also this morning, to your health, April is Parkinson's Awareness Month, a condition that affects a million people in the U.S. and growing. And like most things, early detection and diagnosis is the key to improving care and quality of life. And the University of Findlay is one of the official host locations locally for Monday's total solar eclipse, a designation they are fully embracing over the coming days. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, April 4th, 2024. So as I was perusing the newswire for the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day outside of the main headlines, because you hear about the main headlines anywhere and everywhere, we want to focus in on the other stories that are relevant, that are interesting, that you might not hear about, but that you still need to know about. And I saw this: Spotify users going to see another price jump this year. According to a report from Bloomberg, the music streaming service plans to raise the price for individual subscription plans by $1 and $2 for dual and family subscriptions later this year. The last price hikes came this past July, when the monthly fee went up to about $11 for individuals and $17 for families, and now it's going to go up again. Bloomberg reports Spotify will also begin to offer new music and podcast subscription tiers for $11 a month, and then a tier with audiobooks included would cost more. And if you are on the basic tier that doesn't include audiobooks, you could buy those individually. You remember, it was just about a year ago that they rolled out free audiobooks and made a big deal about it, that this was a, you know, a new feature that they were adding at no cost. And, well, now it appears it's going to cost. So I just bring this up with a reminder that radio is always free. Just saying, radio, it's free. Hey, that should be our logo. Radio, it's free. This is big news. This is very big news. And I think good news. According to a new study, I'll just read the headline here. According to a new study, couples who drink together live longer and have happier marriages. Research from the medical journal The Gerontologist examined drinking behaviors and the impact it had on mortality among couples. They looked at opposite sex couples, so traditional couples. And based on this study conducted by researchers at the University of Michigan, 4,656 married and cohabitating couples over the age of 50 were involved in this study. So this is a large sample size, nearly 5,000 couples. And they looked at the trends of these couples between 1996 and 2016. So a 20-year study. Spouses with concordant or similar drinking behaviors often reported better quality marriages and were married longer compared to those who report discordant drinking behaviors. Analysts revealed concordant drinking spouses, those that indicated they had both consumed alcohol in the last 3 months, survived longer than when one partner drinks and the other does not. And, as a matter of fact, it is better to drink than not to drink. If both sides of the couple were drinkers, it got benefits from that more so than if both sides of the couple were not drinkers. So, again, the researchers conclude that couples who drink together live longer and have happier marriages. Yeah, because you're always in an alcoholic fog. Sometimes, I mean, you can look at that and apply all kinds of, you know, obvious conclusions from that. Drinking helps you deal with your spouse. That's what I take from that. Drinking helps you deal with your spouse. But important to drink together, because when only one half of the couple is wasted and not the other, that can cause problems. So you both want to be drunk. Let's see. What else is going on? Are you an easygoing, likable person? You may think you are, but do you really know if you are easygoing and likable? Well, here's a way to find out. Apparently, a photo shared on TikTok can apparently determine whether or not you are indeed easygoing and likable. This is a picture that is one of those optical illusion pictures. Looks like hand-drawn flowers and a woman's face, which the artist notes that what you see first can offer insight into your personality. If you see the flowers first, you are super easygoing and likable. You always see the best in others and have a hard time saying no because you don't want to disappoint them. Even when people let you down, you choose to forgive them and hold out hope that they will improve. If, on the other hand, you first see a woman's face in the picture, you are an emotional and passionate person. After relationships end, it can take you months to move on, and you can't help but miss what used to be. If you see a woman's face in the image, you are a major overthinker. Very smart, but an overthinker. Whenever you commit to something, you make it happen. You like to keep your circle small and have few close friends, as you find it difficult to trust many people. So, I have not seen this, so I don't know which I am. I have not seen it, but apparently this is going viral on TikTok, a way to tell if you are easygoing and likable, the type of person that people want to be around, or not. I don't know. I've seen a lot of those. Apparently this one is just going viral here. Let's see. What else is going on in the world? Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This is kind of interesting and will certainly lend credence to those who believe that growing up as a kid in years past was better than being a kid today. Former grade school teacher turned stay-at-home mom of two was looking for some 90s kids shows to relive her childhood and apparently found something else in the process. Those old shows chilled her kids out. Her kids were better behaved when she started watching those kids shows from the 90s as opposed to the kids shows of today. The mommy blogger based in Virginia, she has an Instagram page, Mamas and Messes, tells news reporters that she noticed this change right away in her 3-year-old and her 9-month-old when she traded modern kids shows for throwback episodes of TV shows like Clifford, Arthur, Franklin, The Magic School Bus, Little Bear. If you had kids in the 90s, you recognize all of those titles. Lauren is her name. I don't know what her last name is. She said that her youngest son was born with some medical complications, and we relied on TV a lot at times. Before switching to the shows from the 90s, my toddler struggled with turning the TV off. She said screen time sign-offs were usually met with meltdowns from her kids. However, when we started watching the 90s kids shows, her three-year-old really enjoyed the show, but when it was time to turn it off and play, he didn't put up a fight at all. There was another benefit, too. He was struggling with waking up in the middle of the night, saying he was scared. And she says, I really think it was based on the movies and shows he was watching on TV. She said, of the retro programs, the shows were made to teach kids lessons, not just provide entertainment like the shows of today. They don't have all the flashy graphics or high stimulation that today's kids shows do. Today's shows just have so much stimulation, they could be considered addictive. And she said that's what she has found. And, or maybe her kids don't mind turning them off because they just were bad. I don't know. But that's kind of interesting. Maybe you can try that in your household if you have little kids and you're struggling with peeling them away from the screen. Go retro on them. She says they still enjoyed the shows, but they were okay when it was time to go off and do something else. I don't know. It's worth a try, I guess. Kind of interesting. And lastly, among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, we're coming up on the summer box office blockbuster season. And the list of the most anticipated summer movies of the year is out. Fandango does an annual movie-going trends and insights study, and they say the most anticipated summer movies this year will be Deadpool 3, Bad Boys Ride or Die, and Despicable Me 4. Also on the top 10 most anticipated summer films list, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, A Quiet Place Day 1, Inside Out 2, and The Garfield Movie. The study asked more than 6,000 moviegoers about how they feel about going to the cinema, what they are most looking forward to, and so on. And those are the movies that they say are the most anticipated this summer. So be watching for those. Deadpool 3, Bad Boys Ride or Die, and Despicable Me 4 are the top three, the ones that you will want to get tickets early for. See how this summer blockbuster movie season goes. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. A chance of rain or snow showers today, a high in the upper 40s. Rain or snow showers possible tonight, a low in the mid-30s. The date of the total solar eclipse is almost here. Finley is within the path of totality and will experience a total solar eclipse of an estimated 3 minutes 44 seconds beginning at 3:10 p.m. on Monday afternoon. Finley Mayor Christina Mern says the event is a great opportunity to show off the city.
I want people to just enjoy the experience. This is something that we're probably not going to experience again in our lifetime. And being able to show off our community and welcome folks that are here experiencing it for the first time, and hopefully they'll come visit again.
On with WFIN's Chris Oakes. The mayor says the city is well prepared for this special celestial event. Get the full interview and plenty of eclipse information in the story on our website. The Finley Police Department has announced the hiring of a new officer. Zach DeWeese was recently sworn in by the mayor. The 21-year-old is a graduate of Old Fort High School. DeWeese will attend the Ohio Peace Officer Training Academy to earn his Ohio Peace Officer Certificate. He'll be assigned to the department's patrol division after successfully completing the academy. See a picture of the new Finley police officer in the story on our website. A somber anniversary in Ohio this week.
It's been a half century since the super outbreak that spawned a massive tornado that wiped out half of Xenia and killed 34 people. Irene Lewis was civil defense director for Butler County at the time of the storm.
We were getting all kinds of clothing and food and helping with the individuals along with the Red Cross.
Another twister killed three people in Cincinnati's Sailor Park neighborhood. Steve Vaughn, ONN.
The Hancock County Sheriff's Office annual event, Creating Community for a Better Tomorrow, will be held today at the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts. This year's topic is vaping, things you may not know. Those who attend will gain insight into the widespread prevalence of vaping in the community, especially among youth. Get more information on the event and the story on our website. And remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, the Backyard Mission Trip is back. It is an event happening later this month that takes an army of hardworking volunteers to pull off. Literally an army of hardworking volunteers to pull off. But it is a day that you will not soon forget. And Leanne Ireland is with us this morning. Leanne, thanks very much for dropping by. It's good to see you again.
Good morning, Chris. It's been great to see you. It has been a while.
So the Backyard Mission trip has been happening for, I don't mean to put you on the spot here. How many years now?
So we started it in 2010.
Wow.
So we are in our 14th year. Right?
Wow. And the idea behind this, if folks are not familiar with the concept, it's to do good works like you would go to, you know, a third world country and do a mission on a mission trip. That's all well and good, but there are people who need help right in our own backyard, hence the name.
There are so many people, and that is exactly why we started it, was there was just such a need, and we partnered with the city, and so it was just, it's overwhelming the number of people that ask for help every year, and it's usually, you know, senior citizens or people that are physically unable to do the work themselves, and they're simple projects, but it's so great. I can't even begin to tell you how great it is when you go and meet with them and help them out.
It's what I love about this is the concept is so simple, and it seems like one of those light bulb goes on moments. I call them a head slapper. When you hear about it, you think, why didn't I think of that? You know, and yet, as you said, you find out that the need is so great because every year there are so many requests that come in.
We get over 200 projects a year, and we don't get to them because we don't have enough volunteers. And so if there's one message that I could get out today is that please you come sign up, come volunteer. You will not be disappointed. And it's not hard. It's easy.
Yeah. Give us some ideas, some examples of some of the projects that we're talking about here.
The majority of the projects are yard work projects, you know, cleaning up the mulch or laying mulch and doing and cleaning up flower beds. We have little ladies that we ask us to wash their windows every year.
Yeah.
We do some painting, and there is some skilled labor, but a lot of those, because we partner with Habitat for Humanity, get passed off to Habitat for Humanity. So if you are a skilled laborer, you know, for electrical or plumbing, absolutely sign up because we can plug you in. But most of it is anything that is things that anybody can do.
Yeah. So again, a special call for those who might have a special skill, but you don't have to have any kind of special. If you can push a lawnmower or rake a leaf, then you can participate.
Plant a flower. Yeah. I mean, it is easy. You know, and kids can volunteer. I think if families are looking to, you know, teach their children how to volunteer and how to be good neighbors, this is a great way to do that because you can come as a family and you can, you know, we can find you a project that fits for your group.
And in talking to those who have participated in the past, the one thing that they nearly all say is that in addition to that togetherness, whether it's a family or a group of individuals who are, you know, acquaintances or even people who are strangers who, you know, kind of come together for this, there is that camaraderie. But then getting to know these members of the community that they might not have had contact with before is a big part of this, too.
Last year, I was going around and I was taking pictures because I'm the marketing person, right? And we were at a house. I stopped by a house to take some pictures of a group that was working, and a gentleman from the house next to them came out, and he was lovely, and he's like, can I get some help? And I made a phone call back to Dan Kennard, and he, like, sent a team over, and we helped. But these people, they just want to talk, right? And and they're so lovely. And even me, who is part of a church, and we were there at this is another place where we were working. I've known this woman for years, and I learned all kinds of stuff about her. It was just, I can't even tell you how rewarding it
that,
is.
That community togetherness aspect of it, between the camaraderie of all of those who are providing the work and those who are being helped interfacing with it? Because, like you said, a lot of these people are older. Maybe they can't get around as much or as well as they used to. That's why they are in need of assistance. But it also means that they can become rather isolated, and this is some human interaction.
And that is so true. Like, they spend so much time, especially because it's been winter, you know, and it's just starting to get nice, and so they've spent a lot of the time in the winter alone.
Yeah.
And so they just love that contact, and they've got great stories to tell, you know, and so it's just a good point. And I think sometimes people are worried about volunteering because it started with a church project.
Right.
But this really has grown to a community project.
It's a community thing.
Right.
Absolutely. One of the other cool things about this is the goal is to have all of this done in a short period of time in one afternoon. Everybody is out. Wherever you go driving around town, you're going to see the backyard mission projects and people working and so on. So, you know, it's truly a communal event in that regard. So how do folks participate?
So they can sign up online on our website, which is finleybmt.com. Mm-hmm. There's an application that they fill out. It's simple and easy. And then if you have a group, you know, you tell us that, or we will assign a group to you.
Yeah. You don't have to have a group in order to sign up.
You do not have to have a group. You could be one person or you could be two people. And then, you know, you can just contact us on our website. There are the phone numbers and there's email addresses. And so everything is on the website. And then we also, I get so much communications through DMs on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to contact me. It's probably the easiest way. And then I will get you connected in the best way possible.
So the day for the backyard mission trip is set for when?
It's Saturday, April the 27th.
Okay. Saturday, April 27th. When do folks need to sign up so that you can get all of the teams to the right places for all of the projects?
Ideally, we'd like you to sign up prior to the 27th.
Right.
Because
How far prior?
Well, I mean, you can.
I mean, yeah.
You can.
You'll find something.
We will find something for you to do. A week before is ideal.
To make it easiest on everybody involved.
You can, if you wake up on April 27th and you think, I want to go volunteer for the backyard mission trip, come on out to the fairgrounds at the Old Mill Stream building and walk in, and we will put you to work.
Yeah, real quickly, kind of give an idea of how this day goes, because everybody kind of gathers, you said, at the fairgrounds to sort of kick this off, right?
Right. We start to gather around 7. Okay. We'll have like a small little sending off at 7:30. We have breakfast, and if you need like trash bags, and if you're looking for, you know, if you're going out to rake and you don't have rakes or whatever, we have some materials that you can borrow. If you don't have a project, we'll match you up with a project, that kind of stuff. So 7:30 at the Old Mill Stream, and then by 8 o'clock you are out on the road and at your site.
And then it's however long it takes, usually a couple hours, a couple three hours to complete a project.
Yeah, every project is different. You know, they could be a half hour, they could be 3 or 4 hours, and it's up to you. Like, if your team finishes one project and you want to be done, then you can be done.
Yeah.
But if you finish and you want another one, you just call in, which we will provide all that information, and we'll say, go here, and we'll send you out to the next project.
It is a terrific day, the backyard mission trip later this month. And like we said, it takes an army of hardworking volunteers, but it is a day that you will not soon forget. And again, Leanne Ireland is with us this morning. We've got a link on our webpage for more information at the official Backyard Mission Trip website to check that out, and encourage you to volunteer, because it is a terrific way of getting involved within the community and getting everybody, the entire community, involved. That's what I love about this program. Again, Leanne, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great day.
So 2 years your health this morning. April is Parkinson's Awareness Month. It is a condition that affects a million people in the U.S. and growing. And joining us this morning, Blanchard Valley Health System, is Dr. Bill Coase once again. And also from the Hancock County Parkinson's Network, Barb Matheny. Thank you both for being with us in the studio this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good to
Thanks
see you.
Thanks for having us here.
All once again. First of all, Barb, the city council actually made a local designation with this, I guess this past or Tuesday or earlier this week, right? Parkinson's Awareness Month. Talk a little bit about what Parkinson's disease is. This is something that we've all heard the term. Not sure that everybody really knows the full wealth of and breadth of what exactly Parkinson's encompasses.
And nor did I when I was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought it was just older people who shook a lot.
Yeah.
And little did I know all the implications of the disease. So it's a brain disorder. It's associated with a loss of dopamine-producing nerve cells, which help to regulate the body's movement. And up to 40 to 70% of those brain cells are already destroyed by the time you're diagnosed.
Hmm.
And no two people with Parkinson's actually experience the symptoms in a similar way. So that's why it's called the snowflake disease.
We were going to say, like most conditions, early detection and diagnosis is the key to improving care and quality of life. But it becomes a bit of a challenge for doctors to make an early diagnosis because it presents in different ways.
That would be correct. There's a lot of research being done because of the incidence of Parkinson's that we're looking at some new testing that would be able to identify someone early and then get him started on appropriate treatment. And I think one of the things to emphasize about treatment, it's not just medication. Western medicine is what we all want to just take a pill and we'll lose weight or whatever, but good healthy habits are really important, exercise, nutrition, and things like that. So early diagnosis is important.
Yeah. Mentioned, though, those symptoms can vary. In your case, Barb, what initially led you to get the diagnosis?
Initially, actually a year before my symptoms really became noticeable, it was diagnosed as just an essential tremor. And then I pursued that and went to neurologists and got the final designation of it being Parkinson's. My symptoms that I first noted was in the morning, my hand just kind of jumping on my keyboard of my computer and difficulty in brushing my teeth just felt kind of strange. So I thought it was just kind of a pinched nerve or something like that until, you know, I actually had the diagnosis. And so doctors, it's really right now a physical exam, you know, just observation of the doctor looking at you. And they look at four very classic motor symptoms, slowness in movement, stiffness, the resting tremor, and posture instability. Those are the four kind of key factors that they look at. But there are many others. Like I said, it's called the snowflake disease. Another thing I notice personally, and it's very common, is my handwriting getting smaller and smaller.
Hmm.
Sometimes people have kind of a masked facial expression.
Mm-hmm.
The arm swing was another one of mine. My right side is affected, which most people, it starts at least just on one side of their body. So the swing, you know, my arm was kind of stiffer.
Mm-hmm.
You can have balance issues, a foot kind of dragging. And then there are a whole range of non-motor symptoms, such as depression, loss of smell, sleep issues, even constipation. Some of those really start 10 to 20 years before people are even diagnosed.
Wow. You talk about subtle. I mean, some of those are incredibly subtle and can indicate any number of things.
Yes, well, if you think about it, going back to the basic problem, it's a neuron degeneration. And neurons are nerves that go everywhere to your body, so it can affect your bowels. There's a abdominal Parkinson's that people talk about, but they can be very subtle because they overlap other kind of disease states.
And as Barb was mentioning, diagnosis is basically done observationally?
Yes, it is. There are going to be, and we are finding new testing, but it is a physical diagnosis, observation, looking for the things that Barb talked about. The tremor, it becomes the obvious one that people can see.
Right.
But the dyskinesia, or the slowness of movement, the balance kind of problems, and postural hypotension, meaning your blood pressure may drop and get lightheaded and things like that, can be the more incapacitating problems people have.
So we mentioned that this affects about 1 million people in the U.S., but the incidence is growing. Why is that? Do we know?
No, we don't know for sure, but there's lots of, again, research being looked at. A real concern that it may be environmental related to herbicides, pesticides, just all kinds of things that are in the environment. No one has proven that, mm-hmm. but there is a concern, and it would make sense what happens in the brain stem as to what the pathology is.
So treatments, what does treatment look like?
If you don't mind, I'm going to jump in on something he just said.
Okay.
It's interesting that the Midwest has a much higher incidence of the diagnosis. And that's where all of our farming is coming from.
I was going to say, is that one of the things that leads to gives credence to the idea that maybe it is chemical related?
It certainly does. And then there's a higher incidence that seems like age related to lots of friends that I have that would be in that age group when pesticides and all these things were starting to become available. We didn't used to have those 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there is also 15% of people with Parkinson's do have a genetic link. Now, personally, I went through two genetic testings to see if there's any history or any incidence of that. And in my case, it wasn't. Yeah. And also 10% of people who are diagnosed have early onset. So in their 40s or 30s, Michael J. Fox was 30.
I was going to say, that's the most famous example.
Yep, exactly.
That people will recognize. So on the topic of treatment, again,
yes.
This is not a curable condition. What is the treatment and how do you manage it then?
The most obvious one is medications. Mm-hmm. And there certainly are a lot of different combinations of pills that can be taken. There's surgical options like deep brain stimulation, which is brain surgery. I mean, it's a serious decision to go that route.
Yeah.
There's focus ultrasound, and they're developing new things all the time. Nothing that's come out quite yet, but there's hope on the horizon. And then, of course, physical therapy, speech therapy. I went through both of those. And exercise is the only thing that they've truly done so much research that slows the progression of the disease.
Which leads to the question of, is there any preventative? Are there preventative measures, slowing the disease or preventing it?
It would be more slowing it, but as far from a standpoint of definitionally of prevention, no. Not that I'm aware of, that anyone would say, well, you have to avoid this or whatever. There is the genetic component of that, which probably is a correlation that you're more susceptible to something rather than it's directly genetic, but that's the overlap of all these trying to sort those things out.
So as we mentioned, April is Parkinson's Awareness Month, both nationally and locally. As we mentioned, the Hancock County Parkinson's Network, relatively new organization. So what is being planned for the month of April?
Yes, we're pretty excited about it. April 27th, which is the last Saturday of this month, from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock at 50 North, who is hosting this event, we have our Parkinson's Empower Walk. And it's more than just a walk. It's going to be a whole event with vendors, with resource tables available. There's going to be mini exercise classes. mini painting lessons done by the Awakening Minds organization, an immersive Take a Walk in My Parkinson's Shoes, which will be a simulation mimicking symptoms of Parkinson's so people can experience that. Movement, balance, and speech screenings done by physical therapists and others in the medical field, chair massages and Reiki, and then we have almost 40 baskets to raffle off, silent auction, and a 50-50 drawing. So the first part of it is just going to be to explore those different options. Mm-hmm. At 11 o'clock, we'll have a walk on the inside track for people with Parkinson's initially, and then we have teams that have been developed. In fact, you can still sign up and form a team if you want to, and then they'll walk on the track for at the discretion of the walkers, however long they want to continue walking. Mm-hmm. So it's a free event for the public. That we have had such an outpouring of generosity from the community to sponsor this event. So we're looking forward to this being our very first fundraising event. Also in April, though, last fall, we had our first fundraising for selling tulip bulbs. So around town, you'll be seeing red tulips everywhere. And that's a symbol for Parkinson's.
For those who want to learn more, and this is such an important thing, the resource fair, such an important thing because it is a growing prevalence, again, both nationally and in the community. Again, learning, the more we learn, the more we can, you know, help folks get that early diagnosis, get toward that early treatment and so on is the idea.
Absolutely. It's going to be at 50 North. I think Barb gave the date. It's on our website where people can look at it. And we're also, I think the screening part, if someone's interested to look at that, we are going to, with our continuing medical education in the month, talk about degenerative diseases, including Parkinson's.
And the Hancock County Parkinson's Network, you actually have a website where folks can get more information, right?
It's hcparkinsonsnetwork.org.
Okay.
And you can sign up for the event that way. If you wanted to make a donation, you can do it on there. And there are links for people to different websites for information.
We will get that link up on our webpage as well at goodmornings.net to make it easy to find. Again, Barb Matheny with the Hancock County Parkinson's Network with us this morning, along with Dr. Bill Coase, Blanchard Valley Health System, in honor of Parkinson's Awareness Month in April. To your health this morning. Thank you both for taking the time to join us. We appreciate
it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
You know, or I think most of us know, or should know, that you really should not drive with a suspended license. One New York woman found that out the hard way when police say that she was pulled over. Let's see here. Cops in New York say that they initially pulled over 37-year-old Kaylin Snyder about 1 o'clock yesterday morning for driving a vehicle with no license plates. So that's why they originally pulled her over. Come to find out, she has 52 license suspensions in 13 different states. 52 license suspensions in 13 states. Her vehicle was impounded, and she has been charged with aggravated unlicensed operation of a motor vehicle. 52 license suspensions. At some point, you would think you would learn. You would know that this is... Wow. At least she stopped when the cops pulled her over. In this case, in East Texas, the town of Carthage, police say a man who fled from the cops intentionally crashed into a semi-truck just after 9 o'clock yesterday morning. Panola County Courthouse Security was trying to take Chad Wesley Jones into custody. He fled the courthouse and hopped into a vehicle, took off. That, of course, sparked a police chase. When the vehicle was spotted by the cops, Mr. Jones led the police on a pursuit that ended up on State Highway 315. Sheriff's deputies say that's when he rather than been taken into custody, he intentionally crossed into oncoming traffic and collided with a big rig. Mr. Jones is in the hospital. It doesn't say what his condition is, but the Panola County Sheriff's Office says once he is released, he will be booked into the county jail. Man, that's extreme. You'll never take me. Man, really wanted to avoid getting caught by the police when that is your better alternative to turn into oncoming traffic. My goodness. Now, this is all kinds of weird. You talk about unusual arrest warrants. A Texas mom, speaking of the Lone Star State, a Texas mom found out that she had a warrant issued for her arrest because she failed to return some overdue library books. Got an arrest warrant out for overdue library books. Kaylee Morgan only learned that there was a warrant for her arrest when she was attempting to renew her driver's license. She says she did not receive the library's late notices because they were sent to a previous address. But there is a city ordinance in the town of Navasota, Texas. I'm not sure exactly where that is, but Navasota, Texas. There is a city ordinance that considers it a crime not to respond to a library's notice within 10 days. She says they were sent to a former address, so she had no idea. Because she didn't respond, and because that is a crime, and she didn't show up in court, there is an arrest warrant and a $570 fine. Because of the... She says that she took out the library books, and then she had some medical issues, complications with her pregnancy, landed her in the hospital, and things got crazy. She forgot to return them. It seems like a reasonable excuse. But and court documents also do confirm that the books were, in fact, eventually returned, but not before the court got involved. And her story about why she didn't respond did not faze the judge assigned to the case, who warned her that if she is pulled over in Grimes County, she will be arrested for overdue library books. You get pulled over, we find you, you will be arrested. What are they going to charge her with? Aggravated reading? Kaylee actually set up a GoFundMe, which raised enough money for her to not only pay her fines, but also to help with the cost of hiring a lawyer willing to take on her case. And there is some good news here. Kaylee has reached her goal for her GoFundMe, so she is now she now has legal representation. And it actually, her GoFundMe exceeded the amount that she needed to hire an attorney and pay her fine. So she has promised to donate any additional funds to the Smithville Public Library, which is a different library, she says, where she now borrows her books. She's found a new library that's not issuing arrest warrants. Wow. I guess the theory is that libraries are a public entity, considered a public entity, and so if you don't respond to, you know, if you steal their property, if you don't return their books, that's akin to theft of public property. And she didn't respond, and so she's facing, wow, that is, they take library books seriously in the state of Texas. They do everything bigger in Texas, and that includes the fines for the library books. Let's see here. A couple of other items in the broken news this morning. This from Nashville. where a recently divorced man took his celebration too far when he fired more than a dozen gunshots into the air in downtown Nashville. The incident took place just before 6 a.m. on Monday at a crowded intersection downtown Music City. The man in question, 26-year-old Craig Jose Miller, initially denied firing the shots when confronted by police, but the firearm was later recovered, leading to him being questioned again by the cops, and that's when he admitted firing 8 shots, saying that he had just divorced his wife and was celebrating his freedom. Now he is facing charges of reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon, motor vehicle burglary, theft of a firearm, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and assault on a first responder. So he is... his freedom apparently was short-lived. I understand the enthusiasm of finally being granted a divorce, but he took it to an extreme, and now his newfound freedom was very short-lived. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a woman who spent $50,000 in an attempt to look like a real-life Barbie now wants to reverse all the plastic surgeries she's gotten done and go for a more natural look. Serena Smith, age 24, of Beverly Hills, first got her work done at 18, at the age of 18, to transform her chest to enlarge. She got breast augmentation surgery. And that led to, I guess, what you could only call an addiction. She's gotten a nose job, Brazilian butt lift, Botox, fillers on her lips, cheeks, chin, and forehead, all in an attempt to look like a real-life Barbie doll. Now, 8 years later, Serena now says that she wants a more natural look with subtle results. With subtle results. I don't know if you can undo all of that. And if you do, I'm not sure that the end result will be a subtle look. Man. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hi, I'm Ashley Bell, the director of Hancock County CASA. Are you looking for ways to give back to your community? If so, CASA has the opportunity for you. Our volunteers advocate for children right here in Hancock County that have experienced abuse and neglect. There's a child waiting for a volunteer like you. To find out how you can help, call the CASA office at 419-424-7011 or visit our website at hancockcountycasa.org.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Have you noticed there seems to be a new temperance movement in this country? You know, talk about dry January at the start of the year, and in many towns, mocktail bars have popped up and become very popular. And this item here seems to lend some credence to the wisdom of that. Restrictions to late-night alcohol sales at bars and taverns in one neighborhood in Baltimore has resulted in a significant decline in violent crime. All violent crimes dropped by 23% over the course of a full year. Homicides alone dropped by 40% in the first full year that this restriction has been in place. Alcohol sales were shortened by 7 hours at bars and taverns in this community. And immediately there was a 51% drop in crime that has leveled out over the course of the year, but it is still a significant decline. Dr. Erica Rosen of the Alcohol Research Group said, "We were able to take advantage of this natural experiment when the law changed and apply analytic methods to assess the effect of the change. And while they expected to see some improvement, some drop in violent crime and overall crime, the dramatic drop in these statistics was even more significant than they expected." So maybe there is something to this temperance movement after all. So as we mentioned earlier, the University of Findlay is actually one of the official host locations for Monday's total solar eclipse. It is a designation that they are fully embracing over the coming days. Dr. Nathan Tice is with us. He is Associate Professor of Chemistry and Chair of Physical Sciences at the University of Findlay, along with Ben Sapp from the University of Findlay's Mazza Museum. And thank you both for being with us here this morning. What is the biggest exciting part of this for you, Nathan?
Well, I think that, I mean, obviously the total eclipse on Monday afternoon on the 8th is going to be very exciting, yeah. Right? It's sort of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that very few people get to experience. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just been a build-up to that. Like, we like to treat the eclipse as not a one-day, but a multi-day event, many weeks, many months building up to that and being able to build connections out in the community with STEM engagement. And I think Ben would definitely agree with that as well. You know, even if it rains on Monday, which it definitely won't,
we're going to be optimistic.
Yeah, we're going to be optimistic. But I mean, it's been
rub our rabbit's foot. Yeah,
that's right.
That,
yeah. It's been wonderful. And I know Ben's had a lot of great interaction as well at the Mazza Museum.
Talk a little bit about this, you know, build up to all of this and the fact that it has really gotten so many people and especially young people. This is something we've been talking about in the run up on this program as well, engaging young people in getting excited about this.
Right. So we've been for months have been doing programming with kids in our new Conda STEAM Center. With our planetarium on campus, and really building the excitement with school children of all ages, mm-hmm. and really looking forward to a special afternoon of bringing all this to a something that we can always remember. As once in a lifetime.
This will definitely be something that we'll tell our kids and our grandkids about, right. You know, for generations to come. And again, this is more than just a one-day thing. You've got a number of things coming up over the next several days as we lead up to Monday's event.
Yeah, absolutely. So we like to say the university is open and welcoming the public in. So starting on Saturday and Sunday, we're going to have some events going on. So planetarium show, so April the 6th and the 7th, so that Saturday and Sunday, each hour on the hour from 11 to 5, so 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., we will be doing planetarium shows. The Newhart Planetarium has been completely renovated, so if you haven't been in that space, if you haven't been there in a while, please come on campus. That's free. And also Ben and his team, they'll have the Mazza Museum open from 11 to 5 as well to be able to see that. So we certainly want to welcome folks onto campus and get a feel for what the university has to offer.
Okay. What else is going on here?
Sure. On Monday, then, planetarium shows will be taking place. We will have activities all across campus, on campus, that are reflective of the solar eclipse. The museum, as well as the Conda STEAM Center, will be open from 10 to 2 with hands-on activities. And then also at 11 o'clock on Monday, we have Bill Brown. He is a newly retired senior engineer from NASA. He'll be coming and speaking at 11 a.m. in the Mazza Museum area. And that just happened in the last week. He was deciding whether to go to Texas or to Findlay and decided on Findlay because wow. He brought his mom to a conference we had 20 years ago.
Oh, awesome.
So it just really interesting kind of connections that are being made that this eclipse is the result of.
And again, it leans into the idea that this is an opportunity mm-hmm. to get people interested in the sciences. Mm-hmm. And we know that that's, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math. We talk about those as being, you know, key skills. This kind of ticks off a lot of those, all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, if you sort of look at sort of job trends and career pathways, you really have to reach people early. You mm-hmm. know, it's like if you wait till high school or even college, it's too late. Mm-hmm. So we want to engage young people very early, sort of that K through 5 area, and we'd love to have those students on campus. I mean, obviously, Mazza has done a wonderful job with that, but that was the whole point with the STEAM Center is how can you engage other groups, especially, and how can you show that the value of art and the STEM areas mm-hmm. are sort of symbiotic. right? And that creative side of the arts and sort of that analytical side of the science, math, engineering, those actually go hand in hand. So I think the university's done a great job of investing in that, and this is another opportunity where we're saying, you know, there are other college campuses around, like, we're closed, we don't want people on campus. We say, this is a great opportunity. We want people, we welcome people to campus, because I think the university has a lot to offer the community, and we're really excited for that.
And especially, you know, Saturday and Sunday leading up to the event, mm-hmm. to put all of this in perspective. I mean, in one, mm-hmm. One sense, it's just going to be cool to see, but then when you realize how significant it is, you know, that takes it to a different level.
Yeah.
For sure.
So give folks information on, you know, what they need to know with all of these events that are going on, and, you know, stuff that's happening over the weekend and then on Monday itself. So I
would say, first of all, you know, obviously there could be a pretty large influx of outside visitors and Eclipse tourists. You've probably heard about that. There are people that will travel from all around the world. If you've looked at the weather forecast is actually better here than it is in some of the locations that they were saying that was going to be prime viewing, right? Like Texas yes. is supposed to rain, right? So you're going to have a lot of people, and especially because we're very close to the center line of totality. So if you think about, you know, Toledo and Columbus, they're kind of right on the edge. Mm-hmm. So they may see the eclipse, but for a much shorter amount of time.
Yeah.
Or there's areas, excuse me, that don't have the full totality. So Findlay is going to be a prime viewing location, especially because we're right by I-75.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be congestion. So we kind of say, have a plan.
Yeah.
Right.
And not just for the folks who are already planning mm-hmm. on being here, but as you reference, people who will come in, mm-hmm. you know, that we're not necessarily planning to be here immediately, but on the day of may end up here anyway.
They might decide, you know what, Findlay sounds a great place, or maybe my other plans to go somewhere else, I think it's going to be cloudy, I'm going to take a chance there.
Yeah.
So we kind of say, you know, have a plan, make sure you're in the location that you're going to view the eclipse, whether it's the university or somewhere else. Get there early and have a plan, and you know, pack your patience, right? Because there's going to be a lot of people in that area.
Are there certain places on campus that are, you know, kind of designated as viewing areas?
Yes, the South Lawn of the College of Business building is where we will be gathering. The College of Business building and their food court will have food from 7:30 a.m. until 2. And so that's the prime location. The Maz Museum is just south of there. And so those two areas are where most activities will be taking place from 10 until 2 on Monday.
Yeah, and the nice thing there is a lot of stuff within walking distance,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
that's something that a lot of people are saying the best idea is to walk rather than try and drive and clog the streets.
Yeah, that's right,
and all of that. So there's an advantage there. And one of the other things that I thought is really interesting is I've been reading about previous eclipses and how other communities have handled this. Those who have seen eclipses, this becomes a real communal event. Mm-hmm. People who are complete strangers when this starts become almost like friends and family with a shared experience.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what we're hoping. And like I said, we've had a lot of outside speakers come on campus, eclipse chasers, astronomers, people like that. They talk about the total eclipse back in 2017. They say it was very much a life-altering experience, getting emotional, thinking about that. You know, they would take their family with them and being able to share it. So that's what, you know, all the experts say, you know, don't unless you're you're a professional photographer, don't worry about taking pictures of the eclipse. Take pictures of yourself and the people you're with during the eclipse, because that's what you're going to want to remember.
Good point, right. Because there will be plenty of photos.
Yeah, there's
going to
be
eclipse.
People taking NASA is all over the state of Ohio. They're going to be they have the optics. They have the know-how. Don't worry about trying to get a blurry photo from your phone, right, of the eclipse. There's going to be plenty. Take a picture of yourself. Take a selfie of the people you're with. That's what you're going to want to remember.
Yeah. Right. So, again, over the weekend, you've got things going on at the university, and then the day of, where do folks get more information on all of this?
Yeah, so there is a website. It might be just the easiest way is just to Google it. You just go, the University of Findlay Eclipse. There is an Eclipse website.
Okay.
It has a couple of things on there. For example, it has a day of events, and that actually does show the Saturday and Sunday as well, and sort of the hours that were open. And it also has a campus map, so where are we sort of encouraging people to park, where are their restrooms, things like that. But again, as Ben said, it's kind of all in the center of campus, kind of in the Corey Street Mall area by Massa.
Again, Ben Sapp and Dr. Nathan Tice at the University of Findlay talking about the solar eclipse event on campus on Monday. Gentlemen, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That, of course, Good Mornings. Check us out online. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, it's not just your imagination. Research shows Tornado Alley is shifting eastward, and scientists say we could be in for more frequent and more intense storms like the kind we experienced last month. We'll talk about why it's happening. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.